everybody. It's episode 481, and I never said a different number. You can't prove it. And we're going to talk about E3, and I am joined today by John.
It's my pleasure to be here, James.
Greg.
Oi, oi, everyone.
And Guillaume.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Guillaume. We're also joined by the chat, which is now all in agreement that I was way too loud. So we're good. And it is the Wednesday of E3. So yesterday, Nintendo did their Treehouse live stream. I mean, they did it today as well. But they did their big reveal of the next Zelda game for Wii U and NX. And we can stop referring to it as Zelda Wii U / NX because it now has a name. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So immediate reactions having seen the trailer. The trailer is basically, it shows Link waking up in a cave. I mean, everybody listening to this has seen this trailer. I don't need to describe it, but Link wakes up because a disembodied voice tells him to. He goes out into the world and does all kinds of physics-based open-world stuff. That's probably the most reductionist version of this trailer that has ever been described, but If you're listening to the show, there's like a 99% chance you've seen it, or you're being held hostage against your will. So I'm just going to go around. Who wants to go first and kind of give their immediate reaction to like the reveal of what this game is?
I can go.
Sure.
So my reaction to it. Okay. So a couple of things. Okay. First off, the world looks gorgeous. Looks absolutely great. And really, it was interesting watching the live stream because there was the one thing that they brought up that I thought immediately was that it reminds me of there's a picture in the manual of the original game with Link overlooking, he's on top of a cliff overlooking mountains and a sunset. And it reminded me of that, especially the very beginning of the game when they walk out and they're overlooking the cliff. In the trailer, they really focus on a lot of the environmental stuff. So it's pretty obvious right from the start that the environment is going to be a big part of this game.
Totally.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it looks really good. I mean, I'll leave it at that. Those are my first impressions. That was my first impression.
I think my first impression was this kind of thought that Anuma had spent the last, year and a half, probably more, talking about how he was going to burn it all down, just burn everything down and start over. Like, this was supposed to be his grand reinvention of what Zelda is based on the original Zelda game. And there's always this kind of, like, sure you are in the back of my head. Because Nintendo said this stuff before, like, we're gonna reinvent. And, you know, sometimes that leads to Skyward Sword. Sometimes that leads to, like, Majora's Mask. Like, sometimes it isn't a big change. And sometimes you get your Ocarina of Time, where it is a dramatic departure. But, you know, I kind of was like, all right, we'll see what we get. But I was kind of taken back by, like, how much this feels like something like Dying Light. You know, it feels like one of these survival games that are always kind of janky. They're really popular on Steam. They're big in the streaming community. But it's like, all right, I combine this log and this fire, and I get a fire, and then I can cook stuff on it, and I can build a tent, and I can, you know, I can craft weapons, and I can hunt animals, and I can, you know, environment puzzle my way around through physics.
Yeah.
But universally, and part of the appeal of those games is that they are janked. They are usually very janked. And they're usually kind of, where is that? They're nearly always involving zombies. I don't know why, they just do. So to see one of these games that doesn't immediately come off as just loaded with jank, and isn't full of zombies, and as you said, it looks gorgeous and stylish and, you know, exciting looking and vibrant. It was kind of like, oh, so Nintendo has been watching people on Twitch and decided they're going to make their own Twitch game. It's reductionist, but that was my first reaction. Guillaume?
Yeah, well, I would definitely My mind turned rather to Minecraft. Like, I thought when I saw that Link was just like chopping down wood and burning it to make a campfire and then cooking, and then, you know, like your different weapons, like you pick up a branch and that becomes your weapon and it can catch fire, and that becomes, you know, a way to light your way. It can be, you can make other stuff catch fire with it. You can, you know, like this kind of, physics stuff, but also kind of, I don't know, like using these elements and putting them, using them a different way, really reminded me of Minecraft, which I've not played. So I'm really talking out of my ass right now. But
no, I mean, you're not wrong. Minecraft is kind of a progenitor of this rush of these like survival games where,
right.
And it has the same response. Like people make a living putting video of them playing Minecraft on YouTube. This is the world we live in the year of our Lord 2016. But, like, there's definitely a bit of that there. There's this sense of, like, okay, you can go wherever you want, and you can do whatever you want, and you can stack stuff up and just try to break the physics engine. And people will definitely break this game's physics engine at some point. Like, it may take a lot of work, but somebody's going to do it. And yeah, I mean, you could. Minecraft is totally there. You're totally on point for that. And also, that game has zombies. They all have zombies.
Yeah, it does. But yeah, like so that was after watching the trailer. But watching the treehouse play more and more, and showing off the different combinations that you can do, you know, just like using the sail to fly around, and then jumping down on your shield and using that as a snowboard, and then. And the trailer also showed some fun stuff, like, you know, rolling, using boulders, pushing them down slopes to kill enemies, or taking down a beehive so that the bees will attack the moblins. It looks like they really thought about, like, what can we do in this open world that's going to be fun, you know? Like, it seems like they went into it thinking, like, instead of thinking, well, why would we do that? They just went and, like, why wouldn't we, right? Like, why wouldn't you be able to slide down the slope on your shield? You know, it kind of reminds me of, I don't know, like, it's a thing that really sets it apart from Western open worlds, I think. When Western studios make an open world game, it's like, it's usually kind of grounded, you know, and like you might be playing a superhero and he's going to have like his set of skills, but that's about it. Like grinding telephone poles is about like the craziest that you get in those games. But then you look at Japanese games like Metal Gear 5, and you know, the box, like, that was a similar situation, right? Like those boxes that you use as camouflage, you can also slide down slopes with. Why Well, why not, you know?
You can kidnap bears in that game. I mean, that game is silly.
They really embrace the fact that this is a game, you know? Like, I think that the tweet I saw that I don't know, described this game the best was like this guy was saying, like, yeah, so I climbed up a tree and I took off my clothes and I threw a club as far as I could. I'm the hero of Hyrule, you know? And it's just like, yeah, it's absolutely stupid. It's so dumb. And that's what's fun about it. You know, that's what's awesome.
Yeah. Greg?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first thing, I mean, it was the aesthetic. So, I mean, we had a clue about how it was going to look from a while ago, but it wasn't, you know, it could have looked a bit more different, I suppose, given that it's been so long since we got a really good look. And, of course, now we did get quite a very extended look, depending on how much of the streams you actually watched.
Like 7 hours of it at this point.
Yeah, and you know, I was really pleased with how it looks. You know, certainly, you know, you've got that Wind Waker element in there, but it's kind of Wind Waker meets Xenoblade X, really. It would be the quick and dirty way of describing it for me. But, you know, kind of what it reminded me of in a way was something from when I played Wind Waker originally, when you go back down to Hyrule and, you know, you pull the Master Sword out and the color returns to the world and you get a glimpse of the world, you know, beneath the sea, and you wonder, you know, whether you'll get to explore it, and you don't really. There's a little walk over to Gallen's Tower, and that's about it. But this kind of feels like the fulfillment of that promise, you know, in terms of this, you know, being able to just go, you know, imagine what it would be like to go and explore that colourful world with, you know, without any kind of barriers. And yeah. And the thing is, as well, is that it's got this kind of you know, post-apocalyptic-ish feel to it that would
that's
fit
exactly
that
scenario
as well.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's not
like, I mean,
dark. Like that's
no, Link is the last man on Earth. That's
well,
what it felt like.
Yeah. Link is Omega could have been the subtitle, mm-hmm. I suppose. You know, I mean, it even wakes up like kind of like Fallout. You know, like that whole scenario.
The world never changes.
But yeah, no, I mean, look, Wind Waker was post-apocalyptic. It was just the prettiest apocalypse anyone's ever envisioned, you know. But and this might not be, you know, this is pretty similar, really. But just the fact that I don't know whether it's a case of what they chose to show at this point or what it is, but it's, you know, there's so much sort of dilapidated structures and just kind of wildlife and you know, enemies running around, that it kind of feels like it could be that world frozen in the other in time that's just been uninhabited for ages that you just go into. I assume it is not, but I mean, I'm not particularly interested in speculating about the story or anything, but you know, that's what it feels like. It's kind of like a thought that I had by the time the game actually comes out, it'll be 14 years later, I'll actually get to fulfill that kind of desire I had when I played Wind Waker.
Take a second to collect my thoughts. When they first discussed the game, not first as in like 5 years ago when they announced the damn thing, but like when they first were discussing the game this week, there was some confusion about, well, there aren't cities. Money doesn't have the same purpose anymore. But then there's been talk, well, there's like some villages. And in one of the demos, Link stumbles across a woodcutter's cabin that's obviously inhabited right now. Nobody's present, but it hasn't been sitting idle for 100 years. And we do run into one person in the very beginning of the demo. So there are people about, apparently, but maybe not a lot of them. And or maybe they're pretty distributed in small groups, and you know, maybe it wasn't the complete apocalypse, maybe just a reset of civilization or something along those lines. But it's definitely, from the 1% of the game world we've seen, not very populated.
Yeah, which to me was a little bit disappointing, just because, you know, I play stuff like Witcher 3, and when you play that game, same thing, open world game, you can go anywhere you want. It's not as vertical as this
right.
world, but there's people all over the place, so the world really feels alive. Whereas this feels more like literally the original game, where it is Link walking through kind of this area by himself, with surrounded by monsters.
Yeah,
that was the feel that I got, which is okay. I'm just, my question with that is how that is going to hold up over a really long, you know, game.
Yeah.
However many hours you have going through this huge world.
Also, just irrespective of like other people or, you know, NPCs, you talk to them, whatever. But, you know, obviously kind of is going to draw comparisons to Xenoblade Chronicles mm-hmm. X. And, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X doesn't necessarily do an awesome job with like how all the animals that are there kind of interact with each other. They're kind of just there, and, you know, they'll interact with you if you start battling with them or if they've got aggro.
Yep.
But, you know, but they do populate the world. It feels kind of filled in, and you've got these, you know, some of them are absolutely gigantic and all this kind of stuff. You know, the fact that this didn't have, you know, there were, you know, you had the rock monster thing that was a lot like Thardos from Metroid Prime.
Mm-hmm.
You could run across and stuff like that. But it wasn't teeming with life the way
yes.
that Mira was. He seemed very quiet. Again, 1% of the game world. You know, that may be the kind of point they're trying to make with this part. You know, with the sort of ruined Templar time and all that, kind of a sort of quiet and pleasant, but also maybe like a little eerie kind of feel like that. It seems like that's what they were going for.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hoping is that they have more stuff that you can stumble upon, not just chests and stuff that you can blow up, but kind of almost like side quests that kind of, you know,
yeah.
draw you into the world, that, you know, add that, because obviously they're going to have a main quest that's the main thrust of the game that you're going to be going from point A to point B to accomplish X. But I'd love to see kind of more branching stuff where it's optional, but you know, it's kind of cool and tells you more about the world and about its characters and what they do and stuff like
that. Yeah, they were very strong on that angle, weren't they, in the early parts of the stream. It's just talking about the idea that this is, you know, you are going to learn about the world by doing a bunch of optional stuff, you know, that it's not going to kind of do. I mean, I assume there'll be certain major events that will trigger, you know, sort of big chunks, certain chunks of exposition, but it seems like it's, they're going to try and make it a bit more of a kind of organic storytelling than just exposition dump periodic intervals.
I mean, to that end, that Anuma during an interview sheepishly responded to, could you just go and try to kill Calamity Ganon right off the bat? which the impression most people walked away with was, you could, you're probably not going to win, but you could try. But they definitely have been very, you know, strident in saying you could beat the game without really experiencing the core thrust of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, if presumably the end game is you go to the castle where Calamity Ganon is sealed and you take him out. But if you just go straight there, which you can, because you can go anywhere, what happens? How does the game gate you from doing that? And if it doesn't, then yeah, maybe you could just like Chrono Cross this game and just Chrono Trigger this game rather, and just be like,
where you go straight to Lavos.
Lavos is going to get it.
People keep saying that about Chrono Trigger, but you can't really do it unless you're doing a new game plus.
Game plus playthrough, you can't. Yes.
Yeah, we're not talking about that though. We're talking starting. Yeah.
But there's not an obvious analog that a lot of people have played where you can just immediately go to the end boss. There are lots of weird, like, you know, getting into sort of like the Dying Light stuff I mentioned. There's a lot of weird kind of semi-niche games where you can do that. You can just go, I'm just going to go straight to Dracula. I'm not going to screw around with 85-foot-tall Frankenstein. He's just going. But it's a very uncommon thing to do in your game because you do kind of want to manage the experience. I'm sort of thinking back to Xenoblade X, where the game world had as much story as you bothered to get out of it. So you learned a lot about the arrival on Mira and the resettling of Mira by doing the affinity quests with the non-standard party members. They had a lot of, you know, observations over humanity's role in the population of this planet and what happened on Earth, you know, the interactions with the species there. And the idea that this game is going to kind of say, like, if you want to know more about what's happening, it's here. You can go get it if you want to. Like, that kind of makes me want to go do more stuff that normally I'd go like, eh, I can probably pass on this one. Because there's more than just, like, the tangible, here's your piece of heart reward, which I guess aren't in this game. There's this kind of, like, you know, you've built the experience beyond what it was before you got to this place. It's not just you did this thing, here's your reward. You have sort of created a greater, you know, understanding of the game, and you've built a better overall experience. Mm-hmm. Or not. If you just want to skip that stuff, you totally can. Which is kind of, you know, it goes into that unprecedented freedom or whatever the phrase they were using during today's stream.
Yeah.
Well, they're calling it an open air game or something, open air world instead of open world. It's like
that was
Nintendo.
That was tied to the paint style they were using.
Okay.
Yeah, that it was there was this weird little bit where they were describing the paint style they were inspired by, and all I'm looking at is going, you made a Ghibli game. You made a Ghibli. This is a Studio Ghibli game. That's all you've done. especially so, the music in the trailer comes off as very Studio Ghibli. But the Japanese logo, which is amazing, is straight off really the cool box of a Ghibli movie. Like, it's like, all right, you guys have watched a lot of these. I get it. I get what you're doing.
It's not the first time.
Absolutely not.
Which kind of made me think of Castle in the Sky a little bit. I mean, not all the way by any means, but you know, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that they would have had Liverpool.
And the Koroks from Wind Waker, who are back, and by the way, in this game, clearly like remind us of the tree spirits or whatever from Princess Mononoke.
Oh yeah, that they originally were stolen from. I've been corrected by the chat. Guillaume is right. The website describes the genre as, quote, open air adventure. Like, this is worse than communication game. That's a worse genre than communication game.
Oh my God, Nintendo, why?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about it, looking at the vastness of it and all that, is you know, of how it's going to handle kind of fast travel and you know, kind of expanded traversal. And we know about obviously riding around the horse,
right?
But in the glider.
But yeah, and yeah, using the sort of kind of thing that's riffing off the sailcloth from Skyward Sword, you know, yep. It's got full glider now. But you know, you wonder whether you might need, you sort of, you have to go like the equivalent of the Final Fantasy airship or the you know, the aerial mech from Xenoblade or something. If maybe that could be the carrot for doing some of the extra stuff, is to have this complete mastery over the, because it is, as John said, the verticality of it. I mean, yeah, you know, they've expanded Link's kind of physicality from, you know, kind of, they were going a little bit in this direction with Skyward Sword, you had the kind of the sprinting and the stamina meter and the climbing now and everything, but it still seems like, you know, that might wear on you if you sort of re-traversing areas.
Yeah, I mean, so I really hope you're able to fly in some way, shape, or form, just so you can, you know, just take in the scope of the world and fly over it and just see it. You know, not even, I mean, because, I mean, you can easily handle fast travel just by having some sort of warp mechanism. Like, that's, but it's, with this kind of world, you really want to be able to, almost, at, like you said, as a carrot on a stick, to be able to fly over it and kind of survey your domain.
No, exactly.
Once you conquer it.
Exactly. I mean, that's what you have in Xenoblade. I mean, you can fast travel to your heart's content, like, you know, pretty as soon as you've, like, you know, kind of hit a landmark. But you still want that aerial mech to take it all in and get to places where you couldn't get before and all that. You know, there'd still be a separate kind of reward if they offered something.
I'd like to fly really high and then jump off and just glide down.
Oh yeah. So in one of the demos, they did that, and because the glider is gripped on by Link, his grip meter had a factor in it, and they were kind of freaking out because she may have climbed too high and his grip might give out and he would just fall. Mm-hmm. Also, Link ragdolls. Did you notice that? Like, when he hits the ground, the physics engine takes in Link's body. It isn't just, and then you get the animation of him dying. Like, he actually kind of, like, ragdolls when he hits the ground and just sort of rolls down and falls like a sack of potatoes.
No, yeah, so, well, I guess, you know, so there is this kind of physics, there's the kind of a more demanding kind of element on the physics in this game, it would seem, although they seem to be key to point that out with rolling the boulders down there and, you know, doing stuff with cutting down trees and all this. So it's not just as kind of scripted as you would normally expect from some Zelda sort of environments where they're very kind of geared for specific actions. For instance, the fact that the auto jumping is gone, you can just actually jump. You know, yes. that's a big example of that kind of change.
Gil?
Yeah, no, I just think they just seem really proud of their physics engine, you know, and the crazy stuff, like the chain reactions that you can have. And, you know, at some point they were just having fun. They were on a raft and they were using a leaf or whatever to blow into the sail. And of course, it doesn't make sense in the real world, but in the cartoon world that Link and Abbott's, you know, he could make the raft go forward by blowing into it. And so, yeah, I don't know. It just ties with the ragdoll physics and the whole, like, pushing boulders down on enemies and stuff like that. Like, that, it really opens up the ways that you can tackle enemy encounters, the stuff that you can do for fun in general.
Yeah, so when Bill was doing his demo, and Alan was basically just, what are you trying to do here? And he's just trying to stack the bombs up and be a cool guy. And he puts a barrel on an uneven surface, and it falls over and it rolls. And he tries to throw things at them, and then he ends up almost killing himself. But there is in the trailer, or is either in the trailer or in one of the gameplay demos. I'm blanking on it now. At one point in that same area, because there's all these explosive barrels, one of the enemies just either they didn't have weapons around, because apparently if you take their weapons, they'll just grab whatever they can and use it, which is a pretty kind of impressive AI thing to do. Just picks up one of those barrels and chucks it at the player who was playing as Link at that point and just nukes him, which is amazing and stupid and wonderful. But that means, based on how this game works, if you saw that was coming, you could have shot that in his hands and blown it up. Like, there is this sense of, like, oh, I can do whatever I want here. And it kind of...
You can discover what what will happen. Like, not every encounter is going to be the same scripted lock onto the enemy, do this with your sword, do that with your sword, and then, you know, backflip a couple times, and, you know, that kind of stuff, throw a bomb.
Well, and the fact that there's stealth in this game. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, just, like, one of the items that has the most potential to just, like, screw around is the this game's gravity gun, basically. Like, this this magnet where at some point one of the players, I think it was Chico on at the treehouse, was using it. Yeah, and she was using the magnet to pick up this axe at a distance, and she was just, like, kind of like trying to send it into this guardian thing, and she got blasted to hell, of course, but it was just like, it was so dumb. Like, instead of picking up the axe and swinging it herself, it's just like, yeah, I'm just gonna play around with this, and then ineffectually kind of you know, shove it into the enemy. But just the fact that, I don't know, it seems like a very versatile item, and yeah, it opens up so many more possibilities than you usually see with, like, I don't know, like, it's no spinner, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's like, right.
It's not the Dominion rod.
Yeah, well, yeah. Those are the height of specificity, you know, and that's the thing about those items. I feel like, you know, they made some cool puzzles and stuff around those items in those very specific places, but then any broader applications couldn't really pan out. There's a couple of things in the overworld in Twilight Princess, and that's about it. But I mean there is something to be said for specificity in terms of, you know, it makes it a hell of a lot easier to design particular challenges around those kinds of things, you know. And that's going to be the real question. It seems like the kind of the joy of experimentation is going to run extremely strong in this. The question is, once you kind of get past that stage and it's more about the sort of thrust of the game, you know, going out and doing the tasks and solving the puzzles and, you know, building up the character and all that kind of stuff, you know, how much it still feels like it's as clever as the old Zelda games while having all this kind of flexibility. It sounds like quite a challenge.
And in solving the puzzles, how creative are you really allowed to get? Or can you just, you know, use all these items, but you really only need a couple to actually solve the puzzles, and those are the only ones you're kind of allowed to solve the puzzles with? That's what I'm curious for.
So
to see.
when they were doing the one of the, what do they call the little mini dungeons? The shrines?
Shrine of Trials?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was
All of that, so I haven't really seen too much of particular one.
There was one.
It looked
where,
really cool, but
yeah, where basically there were two ways across. There was these pistons, and in one case, you could put the bomb, because you trigger when the bomb explodes. You could put one on this piston, and when it hit it, it launched it towards these breakable blocks that you could blow up. But you could also have used, at least from the looks of it, used the magnet to kind of knock your way out there. Or you could have stood on the piston yourself somewhere else and landed at a different part of the stage and kind of worked your way over there with climbing. So, to an extent, yeah, there are solutions, because otherwise you would end up with intractable problems. But it's a matter of when they build the area, saying, like, there's multiple solutions here, and maybe that you can game the physics engine to come up with some other ones. But ultimately, you know, there is a solution, because I mean, there has to be. But there was when they came out of that one, there was a fight with one of those guardians blocking the path to the next one. And what the game wants you to do is climb over the wall. So sneak, use the stealth in the game to get around behind it, just climb over the wall, leave it alone, because it's early in the game, you can't fight this yet. But what instead the demoer did was essentially baited it, like kited the thing over there and had it blow up the wall itself, and then just went through the wall and almost killed themselves in the process. But like there are options and versatility, and there's definitely going to be stuff happening in this game in a sort of Mario Maker way where they did not intend for you to do this, but you can totally do it, and that's okay.
The issue of bugs and all that is going to be interesting, to say the least, when this, I mean, you know, they probably could use it, take it all the time they can before they put this out, because it's going to be, and even then, even if they're very assiduous with it, by the time, you can bet there's going to be issues that have to get squashed once it comes out. This is good, unlike anything they've ever done before in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I didn't see is with the shrine. I mean, are you allowed to, like, say, pick up a rock from outside the shrine and just walk in there with it? Or is it like cordoned off? You know what I mean? Like, in other words,
shrines do,
you can only use what's inside the shrine.
The shrines do drop you through an elevator, so that may be where they gate that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that would be cool if you could just grab the craziest objects, just the stupidest things that you could find.
Oh, just
like,
break the crap out of them? Well, yeah.
Yeah, and just bring them in, like, you know, Skyrim style, like, you know, making a house with wheels of cheese. Just bring in some stupid object and just start throwing it all around the dungeon and seeing what happens. That'd be really funny.
It's just interesting, the kind of low-tech, high-tech sort of juxtaposition that's going on with the shrines and the outside. Is on the outside, you're in the wilderness, you're living off the land, you're hunting things, cooking things, you know, all that kind of stuff, scavenging clothes and weapons and all that. And then inside, you're using gravity guns and you know, there's the time power, which reminds me of the Ratchet and Clank Cracking Time game and all that kind of, you know, the like higher tech, more explicitly high tech kind of stuff than what you've seen in Zelda before. It's quite an, I assume that'll be part of the story as you gradually reveal it, is you know, what the hell happened there, you know, how did it get so advanced and then crash so hard?
Yeah, it will. I mean, they've sort of given this, like, high level of the, depending on how much you talk to the old man at the start, he gives you varying degrees of plot dump, insofar as this game does plot dumps. And in one where Link is more, Link can say things, like, that's different. Link has dialogue choices, and characters react to them based on the dialogue choices. Mm. But, you know, you can choose just to completely not trust this guy and just kind of walk away, but in one of them, he basically says that everything was good, and then I don't know why they call him Calamity Ganon. basically came
he's,
and they,
is he in cahoots with Wild Bill Zant or something?
Yeah, exactly. He's sealed inside the castle because that was how they had to deal with him, and he's about to come back out. So presumably that is, I mean, they gave him the name Calamity, so presumably that is what happened. You did get a really quick view of it in the trailer, like what looked like a flashback. You had this really dark specter just descend on the castle, and it was, you know, it was a very kind of, from what had been this very verdant and natural showing, was suddenly that one image, you know, that was like, oh yeah, some bad shit happened here. I'm definitely kind of curious, like, how much they're going to describe what happened. Like, well, I mean, ultimately there's the question of who and why was Link, who put Link into sleep for 100 years and said, okay, we just need to keep this, we need this for a while. Like, why, and like, hopefully they handle that. But,
well, that was one of the things that on the stream they said, you can ignore it, or you can find out exactly what happened. But yeah, you could go through the game, finish the game, see the credits without knowing why did Link start asleep in that pod thing.
Yeah. And I did like that Onuma said that we're changing things up, but Link still wakes up at the start of the game. Mm-hmm. There is definitely kind of this sense that this game could have been its own thing. Like, it didn't have to be Zelda, although it is very Zelda-y.
It definitely is. The more I was watching the stream, the more the demo seems small to me, but that's just to be expected. I mean, like, you get familiar with the area and it's just like, oh, okay, I've seen this. But also, like, I could see, like, oh, okay, like, this is so Zelda. And I'm not even sure where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was, yeah, I mean, I didn't really think it was that outside the box, aside from the way the world was presented. I thought a lot of what you were doing was just kind of tweaks on existing, like, iterations on existing kind of Zelda stuff, you know, you know, shooting arrows at enemies. I mean, there's a couple of things like, you know, like how you can kind of, you can scope out the enemies sort of Metal Gear style and see what their stats are, their stats on armor and stuff like that now. But it's more kind of just evolving existing concepts. I mean, ultimately, you're still kind of running through the world, you know, coming up against enemies, you know, shooting them with arrows, shooting them with fire arrows, you know. I really would have liked to have seen more horseback stuff.
Yeah, I haven't seen, so I haven't watched as much of it as you guys have, but I haven't seen horses yet, except in the trailer.
I don't think there was any in any of the streams that I've seen.
Well, and they may have done that because it's a 15-minute demo and they didn't want people seeing more than they wanted them to. So keeping Link moving slow is advantageous.
Yeah, good point.
But, like, and horses don't tend to live on plateaus as a general rule. So I guess it kind of makes sense, but the idea that maybe they're just wild, like they've gone feral, and you just kind of have to break one and ride it.
Yeah, I mean that's what they show in the trailer, is he's just kind of grabs a horse and boom, you're my horse now.
He sneaks up on it, doesn't he? He's using sneaky powers that James. Yeah,
and then the horse tries to kick you off, or
and then you die, and then you come back and play solitaire. You know?
Yeah.
I did catch from some impressions that there's some definite, you know, conversations with Monolith have happened on this game, because they talk about how dying is essentially there's danger, but there's no risk. And, you know, we talked about this with the original Xenoblade Chronicles, where you're willing to kind of throw yourself into situations that are reckless and highly reckless that you normally wouldn't in a game, because if you die, you're just going to go back a few feet. And there's definitely a lot of that in this game, apparently. If you die, it just quickly takes you back relatively close to where you were killed, and you'll be good to go in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things I'm doing in this game is I'm going to climb as high as I possibly can and just jump off.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, just, absolutely.
Just to be stupid.
Just to see him roll down the hill.
Yep.
As a pile of bones that have been shattered.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about flying over the map earlier. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion, like that we're going to be able to find like a nest of birds, possibly from Skyward Sword or something, and you know, tame them and ride them.
That would be cool.
It's just like, and it seems like they've had that type of stuff in previous games. I think has ridden dragons before, and yeah, birds and stuff like that. Like it just makes sense for an open world for that kind of for Link to have that kind of steed.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but verify, Guillaume. Trust but verify.
I'm looking for the quote, and I can't find it now. But as I was kind of doing some pre-show research, apparently in one interview, one of the people talking about the game, not Anuma, said use the word vehicles plural as opposed to horse. And that would be a pretty good thing to have in there, is if you could stumble across the I can't remember what they called those birds in Skyward Sword, but
the loft wings,
yes, because they're kind of amazing, and you know, to run across one of them would be pretty fun.
But then again, like I said, we are living. There is this weird tech in this version of Hyrule as well, so I mean, it could be a more literal vehicle, yeah, as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I like the idea that it's not immediately clear, you know, what is magic, what is technology, what is, you know, what is just, you know, basic human skill and ingenuity. Like, it's because everything is gone, essentially. What we stumble across in the game, like, they're not confined by the world necessarily for like, oh, they could do this, they couldn't do this. So it could be kind of like the desert dungeon in Skyward Sword, where suddenly you realize, like, oh, this is supposed to be the way past, but there was shit even before this, and they had all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, that sense of, like, oh, wow, this world's even more different than I thought it was really cool, and it would be good to see more of that in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was curious that you have the Sheikah Slate, but apparently the gamepad isn't used for anything, really.
Yeah,
they've said that you can play a game with a controller pro, and I guess this is people are assuming that that's because of the NX, because the NX is not going to have a screen on this controller, so they're kind of backing away from using the.
I know. I mean, the one thing I would say, though, is that if we're going to end up making a choice between playing this on Wii U or NX, and unfortunately we're live, so we can't play the sound that indicates what we don't know.
But,
But off TV play is essential for me to enjoy this game to its fullest. I've gone through the experience of Xenoblade. Obviously, it's quite a different game in a number of ways, but fundamentally, there's some similarities there in terms of, you know, getting the full enjoyment of roaming around the world and all that. I don't think I'll be able to do that sat in front of the TV. So if for some reason off TV play or something that approximates that functionality is not an option with the NX version, I'll be going with Wii U for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm curious if the Sheikah Slate, if it tells us anything about what NX is. God forbid, I'm going to go there. I'm just going to go there. I don't know. I mean, that was the first thing I thought was like, does this tell us anything about NX? Like just the fact that, well, the fact that it doesn't use the gamepad, I mean, because this game has to work ultimately on both platforms. So
you
always have to wonder, are they going to optimize it for one and not the other? Or are they just like, what are they going to leave out? Like what's going to be in and what's going to be out on one platform versus the other?
So I kind of want to, we've got some questions from the chat and I kind of want to tie this one in because it's related, although not about this game specifically.
Yeah.
This is from GX. It says, while we still have a few months left to grasp at straws, what does the Just Dance 2017 announcement tell us about the NX? Will it support Wii remotes? Will it have a TV component? Or be at least as powerful as the original Wii console? Are Hatsune Miku and vegetable costumes required for multiplayer? Or does it just confirm that NX probably exists and that Ubisoft continues to put the ass in mass?
Yeah, it confirms that NX is a game console. That's pretty
NX
much all
exists.
It confirms
that
me.
Was so I mentioned this, but whenever you watch the Ubisoft press conference just via Twitter and you don't have the video in front of you, there's always this like palpable sense of what the fuck is going on in there.
Yeah.
So like it's just these sudden images that people are tweeting and thinking, what? Vivendi can't buy these people soon enough.
Well, I mean, it at least confirms that it's gonna have motion control or a camera of some sort, right?
So you can actually play the Just Dance on Wii U with your cell phone.
I didn't know that. I'm not up on the Just Dance lore.
Yeah,
so.
You could do that. So I think, and I say that because I think ultimately it doesn't tell us a lot because there's a solution to any problem. You know?
Yeah. Just Dance will find a way.
That's right. But you can absolutely play Just Dance using your cell phone. Yes. Yeah, so I would say that it tells us that the NX exists and that Ubisoft really likes to put Just Dance on stuff.
Yeah.
There was a comment by Ubisoft's Just Dance maven. I don't know what the position of the just vice president vice president of Just Dancing. That they were very bullish on what the NX is in terms of engaging families, but like People read way too into that, just like they're reading way too into the Sheikah Stone and the NX announcement for Just Dance. Of course, that's what the person who's selling Just Dance is going to say. He does not give an F if hardcore gamers take up the NX. He ain't going to get bonuses off them. Mm-hmm. So like, NX is... I thought for sure by the end of E3, we'd know something. Not because Nintendo was going to announce it, but because there's so many players in the industry in one place that it seems impossible. It seems utterly impossible. The entirety of the international games media is here, and the majority of the still standing developers and publishers are here. And alcohol is everywhere at E3. Like, if you've never been, it is everywhere. You hear about it, but no, it is. And, like, I thought for sure by now we'd know something. But instead we're answering questions about fucking Just Dance, so apparently we don't know anything.
Yeah, we don't.
There we go. Oh, too soon.
That's
done.
Good stuff right there.
Done. Perfect. Nicely done. Nicely done, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what this tells us about NX. Probably not a whole lot.
Nope.
Maybe it will have a portable component. I don't know. Maybe that will be some sort of tie-in with the Sheikah Slate somehow, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure. It's cool. It's a cool thing to talk about as a topic because it gives us stuff to pontificate on. And
there's nothing else in the absence of absolutely anything.
It just makes the NX even more mysterious because, like, it's the Sheikah Stone as a device is so clearly like, man, we are making a Wii U ass Wii U game. And then somebody walked into the studio one day, oh, you can put this on NX too. And they went, shit. All right. De-emphasize Sheikah Stone.
Do we think that the Wii U version is compromised because of the NX? Like, because it just seems like they made such great strides with the Zelda inventory management with the touchscreens. Totally. And to not use that, like, it just feels like, what are you doing? Like, especially since this is a game where you collect, kind of loot and you craft stuff. And it just feels like you're going to be managing that inventory a lot. So why not use the touchscreen? And it some people would consider, like, well, sometimes Nintendo compromises games to make them Wii U games, you know, like this didn't need the touchscreen, but it does because it's a Wii U game. So, but in this case, it kind of feels the reverse.
Yeah, and I was watching them sort of do inventory management as they were playing because there's all these weird, like, different slides of inventory. And it looks like it's all D-pad managed. So it's like you'd press up and down to change what inventory type of thing you're in, you know, weapons, clothing, etc. And then you could press left and right and pick stuff. And that's fine, and it would work. But yeah, there is something about a touchscreen that's kind of just... Even in Xenoblade and all the hate its menus get, that game would be unplayable without the touchscreen. Yeah. Granted, you can't read the menus on the touchscreen, so maybe it's unplayable.
You can. I mean, you have to interpolate a little bit when some letters bleed into each other. But
I'm sorry, Greg. I wasn't trained to try to read Linear B. Like, I don't need to do that. Just make your font bigger, assholes.
I'd be really disappointed if the final game didn't, but maybe it was just a case of being coy. They have managed to keep such a almost implausibly good lid on this thing. Maybe it's just part of the management strategy to not to give, like, well, if we show a certain amount of gamepad functionality, then it'll lead to more questions about how would this work on the next console or not, and they just wanted to diffuse that before it ever got going or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see them doing that.
The bit with Wind Waker HD and the 2 on 3DS and now Twilight Princess HD, it would be a tough pill to swallow to go backwards on that.
Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't look like there's anything to port to NX, then nobody's going to ask that question.
Right. I'll be interested to see what I'll be interested to see, like, how they've spent a lot of time, you know, making the Zelda thing more streamlined, because they've been doing it since the Ocarina of Time game, the Ocarina of Time 3D. And I'll be curious if they don't have a touchscreen to work with. I mean, they're already doing a lot of reinvention here. And items are much more, you know, temporary. Like, everything is more transient in this game because stuff.
Yeah,
breaks.
It's all the sort of consumable aspect of it and all that. Yeah.
So it's entirely plausible that the Zelda management item management system that originated out of what would you say, Link to the Past, ultimately, doesn't really mesh with what the game is. And maybe that's why they feel more comfortable doing it.
I don't know. It seems like, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be exactly the same as what you have, because, like you said, now you've got these kind of, like, big library of items rather than just sort of this one screen of key items that you would manage in, like, a normal kind of the more traditional 3D Zeldas that have been remade on touchscreen devices. But it just seems like if anything, it's needed more, like I said, with all this loot stuff and all that, you know. Like, I mean, like I said, maybe you'd have to take it further. For some people maybe this isn't a huge deal, but I know it's just one of these things. It's like when I played Link's Awakening on Virtual Console, which was after playing Ocarina of Time 3D, you know, and of course, because that was on Game Boy and only had two buttons and all that, you were stopping all the time and switching and all that. It just, you know, those little impediments to the flow add up, and I keep wishing for a Link's Awakening remake that didn't even have to change anything other than just put a touchscreen thing on the bottom, so I'd have to pause it so often that it would be, like, right up there with my favourite Zeldas, I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in just like, given that all, everything here seems transient and everything, like, so in the trailer, Link has 5-6 different outfits total, and that trailer is only about 3 minutes long and dozens of different items. And I'm curious just if they just say, eh, you know, items are in your inventory for such small periods of time, you don't necessarily need to manage, you know. Nobody, you're not going to need to pull out the lantern and the Dominion Rod and Uku at the same time, so it doesn't matter. And maybe by putting all of these functionality onto the Sheikah Stone, that's how they're managing it. They're saying, like, basically, this is your item. This is your one item. And you just pull it up, and you pick the power you want, and you use it. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with where that would take the game. I'm definitely curious how much the reinvention of the series pushes in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I just hope they have some really hard to get items that never break.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I would imagine. So seeing the Master Sword in its rusted and pitted state, and considering the Master Sword and Link is in the series are essentially two parts of the same thing.
Well, the thing is, it's always there for, like, generations untouched before you get it, so...
Right.
What they're trying to say that, like, it's thousands of years?
Maybe the last Link was a real bum and did not take good care of it.
Well, yeah. maybe the resolution just was not good enough to show the rust before. I mean, Super Nintendo, like, it was not even in Link to the Past, it was not really that powerful until you took it to a blacksmith, so...
Yeah, I would assume at some point...
Yeah, it need to be knocked into shape.
I would assume at some point the restoration of that sword, it seems fairly emblematic of what the game is going for thematically, like trying to essentially push back all this bad stuff that has happened. It seems like a pretty almost inevitable that, like, hey, here, you found the Master Sword. I mean, considering how dramatic its inclusion is in the logo.
Could you imagine? I wonder if you actually, this all do it anyway. Like, you could actually beat the game without the Master Sword, and that would be a badge of honor.
What if you go to kill Ganon afterwards, and then, like, the credits start to roll, and he just gets back up? He's like, "Did you forget a part?" And then just kills you, and that's like
the Castlevania bad ending, you know? Where so, well, you kind of did it, but you didn't, did you?
And he's then, gone for a little while.
Got to come back and do it for real, get the holy goggles on, and whatever.
So, speaking of collecting items, Klexioshi asked, Nintendo tends to lend their game designs to being the completionist mindset, and making said completion a somewhat reasonable thing to do. Between the Xenoblade games and now this, is this a sort of shift in the paradigm? Is this sort of shift in paradigm a sign of what's to come? A Metroid game with too many missile tanks to feasibly collect in under 100 hours? A return to the blue coins from Super Mario Sunshine, hidden so spread out and hidden behind side quests?
I think Super Mario Sunshine's compressed development schedule can be blamed for that rather than any kind of paradigm shift in their development philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that while you could always collect everything in a Zelda game, really once Ocarina of Time rolls around, it becomes every generation it becomes increasingly untenable. Remember in Twilight Princess, it's 5 pieces of heart to complete a full tank.
Yeah.
There is so much crap in that game that you have to get everything.
Yeah, I never got the biggest wallet. I was like, you don't even need it.
No, they really kind of fixed that more in the HD remake by making the initial wallets bigger.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, I don't know whether you ever really needed the biggest wallet unless you need it to buy
the magic armor. I think it costs more than the medium wallet.
I was gonna say, with Twilight Princess, you know, in the remake, I mean, they actually sort of had all those Miiverse stamps almost to kind of make some of the chests more meaningful because so many of them just had rupees in, which again, you know, were not a big deal. It's like they came up with all these chests and didn't know what to put in them in the original version. And I mean, the stamps at least kind of makes it a little bit more differentiated and you have some kind of use for them. So that will be a bit of a problem, I would have thought, in this game, in the sense of, you know, you've got this vast world and all these little nooks and crannies to put chests in, but what is the real significance of what comes out of those. We, you know, that is a bit tricky to manage, I think.
Yeah. It's a cool, like, idea that maybe that there's all this stuff that I'll never see, because I used to replay Zelda games when I didn't, you know, when I was in school, when I had free time, when I was in high school, when I was in college, I didn't have time to do it. But like, it doesn't, I just don't do it because there's the never really feel the need and I don't have the time. But the idea that there's this, that there's maybe stuff I just didn't see and a different way to do it. Like, I think it does add replayability to the entire equation. And just, the idea of dicking around when you can start throwing metal objects at enemies, or, you know, knock down bees' nests, or just be a complete jerk. Like, there's something about that that makes me kind of want to just goof off in the game world some more.
Especially when, you know, wind can blow fire and stuff like that. It's,
yeah,
you know,
that was cute. Again, it's sort of given it this feeling of a, you know, kind of a world where that has rules, you know, that you can exploit however you want. But I would have thought this would be the exception to the rule in terms of Nintendo's overall philosophy. I mean, games of this scope and size and all that are, you know, obviously massive undertakings that are not going to become par for the course, you know, relative to the whole kind of library of software that they have to put out to populate their systems. So I think more, you know, if we're talking Mario, we're talking Metroid, I think it 100% is probably going to be remain the kind of thing where it just feels like it's within reach if you apply yourself. You know, not easy, you know, not a matter of course, but, you know, if you put the effort into finding some things or maybe do some really hard sort of extra challenges, then you can get 100% without it being some enormous time investment, or, you know, having to go through pages and pages of a FAQ, or just be ridiculously kind of thorough about things. So I think that this is, you know, I mean, I guess it will depend on the success of this game, you know, in various ways to some extent. But even if I think it is something of a success commercially, creatively, however you want to look at it, I still would imagine it would be, you know, more of the outlier.
Right. So, real quick before we move on from Zelda, Dark Gray Returns asked, so Breath of the Wild was the most talked about game at E3 according to Brandwatch, which just traced a bunch of stuff on Twitter. Do you think that's thanks to the approach of focusing entirely on Zelda, or is it just because it's Zelda? Do you think they would have presented it this way during a regular Nintendo Direct among other games? I think the fact that it is, it's probably a more radical departure from the series than most people expected, I think has contributed heavily to it. But I think it also it's just nice to look at.
I also think it's the fact that they release one like once a decade. It's like if Bigfoot got captured, that would probably be a pretty big story.
Yeah. Yes, it would be a big story. I didn't realize we'd catch Bigfoot once a decade.
I'm just saying, though, it's like if you never see something, when it finally comes out, you're like, oh, my God. Like if Valve released Half-Life 3 or previewed Half-Life 3, everybody would lose their minds.
Oh, totally.
You know? But I mean, all the other games shown at E3, people have kind of known about them, and, you know, it's not really anything new.
Yeah. And there is this kind of sense that it looks different than a lot of the stuff that was shown. Like it looks like a different cat. And there's something about that, I think, that has appeal to it. But yeah, it is Zelda, and yeah, Nintendo talked about it for 5 hours a day for 2 days. So yeah, it did.
Yeah.
there is lots of opportunity for people to be tweeting about the game. But I think this game itself and how it's structured did suit itself to being sort of singularly focused on, because there is so many things you can show, and so many like, oh, that's really cool things you can do that. It works out well for this game. I think it would have been more difficult if this were Skyward Sword. Just because there's not as much like, hey, show off how many options you have available to you in that game. And this game has kind of a sandbox feel to it. Like
as you were pointing up, like they're basically doing a Let's Play live, you know, to show it off the first time. It's just So yeah, you couldn't do that with any game, but here, like, you could even pick out like the different personalities of the Treehouse staff. You know, like Chico is an agent of chaos, and Bill Trennan is try his hardest, but doesn't really come close to that same kind of pure destructive spirit. You know,
that's why I got fired. So any last thoughts on I keep wanting to call the Wild. Any last thoughts on Breath of the Wild?
I've seen so many wrong titles. This title is going to get said wrong
forever.
Yeah. It's going to be the most misnamed misidentified Zelda in history, I think.
I think for me, just in terms of like a real quick wrap up, I'm very intrigued. In general, the sort of open world style game hasn't really been my area of focus as a gamer. You know, there's definitely, somebody mentioned it in the chat, there's definitely like a little bit of Monster Hunter going on here with cooking food and crafting stuff. And yes, yeah, the cooking animation straight up stolen from Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. And there does feel a little bit of like this game was created in a lab, hybridizing things that have worked in other games with the Zelda franchise. But I can't help but notice the sort of pure glee that Anuma's going around with talking about this game. Like there is this palpable sense of like they're super happy with this, and like they think they've made something really cool. And from what I've seen, it looks really cool. So, God, we have to wait till next year to play it.
Yeah, that's probably a relief just to be able to talk about it, because so far. It's only been like, yeah, your horse is going to dodge
trees. It's
not going to
run into trees. Horses don't run into trees.
It's like that's the most exciting thing he could share. I'm sure it's been like eating him up inside, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and that booth that they built. Like, can you imagine working on a game like this for so many years? And then you see, if you haven't seen the booth, actually, Matt Bozon posted a panoramic images from inside it, and Nintendo World Report has a bunch of pictures. There are videos of it too, where like before you come into the booth, there is like this movie you watch. It's like a trailer, and at the end, the projector screen goes up. It's just like in the shrine. So it's that same kind of door opening animation from the shrines, and behind it is what they were projecting on the screen is what's actually behind the screen. So it actually looks like you're walking through a shrine like that. That booth is amazing. That is probably one of
the coolest
booths.
So when they went about the immersive experience, it was a total BS. They really went for it. Fair play.
They really did. Like you go find video of going through that booth. It's kind of amazing. but yeah, like I can imagine if you've been working on a game and you're really excited to talk about it, and then you get to go and you see that, like you must feel like this is cool. I am so excited. Look at what they've done. They're behind me. I'm behind this. Let's do it. And they just seem energized. So I'm excited. I'm excited to actually get to play it. John, what are you thinking?
I'm curious to see. Obviously, it looks really cool. I'm curious to see how they keep the open world compelling. Something like of this size and scope. I mean, once you kind of get through the main quest, like what else is there to do in the world? And how they make it feel kind of a little bit more alive. And I really just want, I feel like this was perfectly fine to kind of show off the beginning sort of game. Yeah, the first area, you know, kind of what you can do, that kind of thing. A tech demo kind of thing. But I'm curious to see kind of how they flesh out the rest of the concept.
Yeah, totally. Guillaume?
Yeah, I don't know. Like it's more physics based than I expected. The whole like you don't cut the hearts out of grass anymore kind of threw me off. I'm not sure if it's what I wanted. Like the whole your items can break and you have to find new ones and stuff like that. Like initially, you know, I kind of I didn't like it. Let's say, you know, like oh, I have to cook food to be able to restore health. That sounds like, you know, kind of time killing nonsense, but you know, like I try to keep an open mind that it probably helps you kind of inhabit this world more, right? Like I mean, to get more the feeling that yes, like you're kind of surviving away in Hyrule, and I don't know, I'm looking forward to playing it. Yeah. But it's definitely kind of it was jarring at first, but
totally.
The treehouse seems to have so much fun just like goofing around in that world that they pretty much sold me on it.
Cool. Do you think that it's going to be long and bloated and something that you'll never finish?
I think that's the thing, though. I mean, you can cut to the quick by the sound of it once you've had enough. That's the thing. I mean, I would imagine that'd be one of the upsides of this more hands-off structure. Is that when you're ready to call it.
You know? Yeah, and also like Zelda gameplay, I find that more interesting than kind of just getting in fight after fight after fight in something like Xenoblade Chronicles X. You know, like we're talking about how are they going to make the overworld feel, you know, full and alive? And I'm just, well, you know, Xenoblade was not, you know, sure, like it kind of felt alive, but it was just get in a battle, get, you know, some enemy aggro and like it attacks you and you have to defend yourself. And that was basically the limit.
Giant King Kong boulders at you. Yeah.
Yeah. That was basically like the limit of the interaction that you could have, you know, until you got a skill and then you could jump higher. Woohoo. And then you can fly. Woohoo. But there's nothing really opens up, you know. The only thing that changes is like, oh, these chests that I couldn't open before, now I've got enough blade points to be able to open them. It's, you know, I think that Zelda seems to offer something more substantial than that.
Well, you'd expect so, but I think it will be a challenge to get that meaningful feeling of progression while having it be as genuinely open as they claim it will be. That is a real design challenge that I'm very intrigued to see how they resolve that.
I am concerned about that just because of my feelings with the Link Between Worlds, so I'm definitely still nervous about that element in particular. But I think we need to move on from Zelda because they didn't just show Zelda despite their initial reports that they were only going to just show Zelda.
Well, even after they, you know, said the other games they were going to show, you know, today, they ended up sort of expounding on that, and then we actually got announcements and all sorts.
Yeah, we
of
did.
Things.
So let's do some quick announcements. Actually, on Sunday, was it Sunday? Nintendo,
I don't know. What are you going to say?
The Nintendo, the Indies thing, or was that Monday? Nintendo appeared on the Keeley's thing. Damon Baker appeared on Keeley's thing to kind of talk about some indie games, and his former boss was there, which was a little weird. To talk about Axiom Verge on Wii U, they talked about Jotun, and they talked about Runbo, which is an actual, real, new 3DS retail product.
So Runbo gets a retail release, and Rhythm Heaven doesn't.
Yes. I see. we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But it got a new 3DS-only retail release. Even crazier. But they also announced Severed from Drinkbox Studios is coming to both 3DS and Wii U with cross-buy. Which is cool. Like I'm kind of excited to play that game. So that's something to look forward to. And actually, NWR is going to have coverage of that game on the site because I'm pretty sure they got to play it. I know they had the opportunity to talk to people who are making the game. So you can head over there for info on that. But really, it was yesterday that stuff got going. And most of yesterday was devoted to Zelda, but there was that weird Pokemon thing in the middle.
A lot of people were not impressed by the way that they presented Pokemon, even though they were people interested in Pokemon, you know, like they were basically showing like, this is how you play Pokemon. And everyone was just like, holy shit, we know
this. It was pretty rough. Like
Pokemon crowd's tough.
Yeah,
but like grizzled vets smoking cigarettes and like, you know, with the like Coors Light, like, come on, get to the meat of the matter. This
get
the
to
crap.
The Mons.
But personally, like I think I might be more inclined to pick up this version than the previous ones just because it does look so much better. Like I don't remember, like did the previous 3DS games have the kind of the quote unquote realistic anime proportioned, you know,
I don't remember.
Characters or no?
One of the questions we got from Jargon was they hadn't played a Pokemon game since the original, and this one has him surprisingly tempted. Anybody else? Guillaume, it sounds like you are at least tempted by this game.
Yeah,
but
well,
yeah, it
just
it
because
does look
they said that Right. They talked about some features that would make the game easier to get into for newcomers, and
such as
putting on the screen the stats, like the how your move is going to affect the other Pokemon. You know, kind of like a Fire Emblem, let's say, and that's good. You know, like that's definitely something that I want to know, because
it was always a bit weak when as I mentioned before, I hadn't played a Pokemon game since Heart Gold, Soul Silver, but it always seemed like it didn't make the greatest use of the second screen for giving you that extra information. You know, that's a great thing about the DS, 3DS, you know, you can load up that kind of stat information without just puking all over the main display.
Right, and just like, you know, like when I had trouble getting into Pokemon Trozei, whatever it's called, like all these Pokemon, and it was not clear which type they were, but also beyond that, I had no idea which type was weak against which other type, you know? Like, what's a dragon Pokemon weak against? Like a
nothing, he's a
Pokemon?
Fucking dragon! Like
right.
what,
and yet,
he should be
you know,
against nothing!
Yeah, so that kind of, I like to have that kind of info on screen, you know? Like, I got into RPGs like Etrian Odyssey and stuff when they started putting that information on the screen, when you just could just call it up
totally.
By pressing a button. And so, yeah, it's a feature I love, and I'm way more interested in this one because of that. And,
yeah.
Yes, someone confirmed on the chat that in the previous Pokemon games on 3DS, the characters were a bit chibified. Here they just look, you know, kind of realistically proportioned, and it's really appealing.
It seems like they've been making these sort of incremental, you know, changes to the visuals, you know, basically since the last time I played one on DS. You know, if you go Black and White, they started to build up the environments a bit more, you know, make it, it was a bit less like just a facsimile of what they'd always look like. And yeah, this is like the sort of the latest kind of iteration in that now. And it did certainly, you know, for all the talk about how little Pokemon game changes, Pokemon games change over time, you know, it sure as hell looks a lot different than the last time I played a Pokemon
well,
game.
The only one that I've played is Ruby Red, Fire Red anyway,
right.
Yeah, Fire Red,
right,
so
yeah, Fire Red,
it looks quite different, and yeah, looking
yep.
forward to it.
Yeah, I'm always kind of like, well, maybe this one I'll take a shot at it, but it when it comes time to play it, I'm like, I don't know that I want to play another Pokemon game. Like,
I was in that cycle, but also it's kind of like, well, there'll be another one next year, and you know, that might be even better. You know, so I think the year off has done it some good with me anyway. Mm.
Plus,
I'm
Nintendo
out and never play another Pokemon game ever.
Yeah, plus Nintendo
I will
announcing.
Not be swayed.
So basically, all you're saying is we need to have another. If all we need to do is have go to PAX again, and John's back in, so we're fine.
That's completely like completely credible threat. What he didn't say is that he wouldn't buy another one. That would actually be.
I will steal one.
I will
arrested in Santa Barbara, California today for breaking into a
for stealing
a
Pokemon
GameStop.
Moon.
He was caught with two copies of Pokemon, and he said I needed them both.
I had to catch them all.
Whole collection.
If my Pokemon bank subscription's going unused, I need them all.
Yes.
I'm definitely like curious because the presentation was brutal. It was brutal. Know your audience. Your audience doesn't need to be told about Pokemon.
Right.
But like, yeah, I mean, it looks like, I mean, Pokemon, they could be as lazy as they want to be on that series. Ultimately, it's still going to sell a trillion copies, but it does look like they're trying. And there were definitely Pokemon games in the past where you could say they might have phoned this one in a little bit. So, you know, maybe it'll be okay. But yeah, doing the Zelda tease and then, you know, like leaving you unsatisfied and flipping over to Pokemon, then coming back to Zelda, brutal.
Yeah,
absolutely
I was a little curious. I think maybe just start with Pokemon. rather than, you know, give that tease and then you know, so I don't know what the assumption was that, yeah, there's all these Zelda fans that have no idea what Pokemon is.
I think that,
need
you
to
know,
be told how to play.
that data showing like how many times people talked about Zelda on social media, like the part that was left out is that half of the mentions were like, bring back Zelda, where's Zelda, and
I saw an image from, I think it was from the Giant Bomb stream, where they basically put up a sign that said, "We'll be back when Pokemon is over." Like, they just walked away.
It's too bad, though. It looks good.
It does, but, like, it was such a... There is a way to present Pokemon, and you can take as much time as they took to do it, and I think do a good job of it. I just don't think we need... I mean, this is, like, the 39th Pokemon game.
They're not gonna
shelf a Mario game by going like, "Hey, you walk right and jump. Let me explain the value of walking right." They're not gonna do that. So, you know, tell me what's new in this game. Tell me why this game is better. If I haven't played in a while, tell me why I want to come in.
But so, speaking of games that were kind of poorly presented, can we jump to Ever Oasis?
Yeah, let's talk about Ever Oasis.
That's the new like, action RPG adventure game developed by Gresso, and that they were kind of mentioning, like, this new IP that we're revealing for the first time. And, the trailer that they showed, in my opinion, is not very good, because it just looks like kind of a fantasy life kind of thing.
Yeah,
where
you can build your village, or you can go to dungeons, and you can be in desert, and make friends with people who are fishes.
Yeah, the art style, like I've seen someone describe it as a Korean RPG, which is like, oof, ouch,
it is spot on. It looks like a KMMO. It totally does.
Yeah,
but that's not like from like 2002 specifically. But
I saw a whole lot of people kind of immediately dismiss it and, you know, tune out on Twitter after the trailer. And then the Treehouse played it, and they showed off the one of the first dungeons, and it looks so great. It looks really, really good. Like, you've got, so this is a single player game. You've got this party of three characters, and each one has, you know, kind of a special ability, and you can switch between them. And kind of in the E7 way, I suppose. But E7 is more like an action RPG than this. Like, this, you could use their special abilities like blowing wind or whatever to solve puzzles. And in the dungeon that they were playing, like, you had this very, very Metroid moment where the character just got into some sort of plant, I think, and was spit out and like, kind of rolled into this small kind of morph ball tunnel. And I don't know, like it looked like this game has so much Nintendo DNA in it, you know, so much Zelda, so much Metroid. It looks awesome.
And that makes sense, because Gretzo for the last 6 years has been in the Zelda port dungeon. So,
yeah,
like, and Street Pass games, right? They did.
They did some Street Pass games, and before that, didn't they work on 3D Dot Game Heroes?
I'm not sure.
I didn't think that was the Silicon Studio who
did. Okay, you're right.
Gretzo. Gresso made the Flower Town game, and unfortunately, it looks like they were so sick of flowers that they set this game in the desert. So, never again.
Screw flowers.
I mean, I guess the biggest. It's a little unfortunate, though, you know, in the deluge of RPGs, you know, that this is coming, because it seems like, it's apt to get dismissed by people fairly or unfairly. But it does seem like it's got more of an action component to it than a lot of the stuff that's coming. And has been coming on 3DS like this year and next year, so I think it might provide a bit of something, a bit of a different experience. But when we did the end of console cycle episode like last year, like, we're living it, Kirby and RPGs, we are living it.
So this game is coming out in 2017, so it's missing the year of RPGs, but as Neil said,
Yeah, basically, maybe it's just the start of the second year of our RPGs. But it just looks great, you know. Like they were showing off the boss at the end of the dungeon looked like a sphinx, which makes sense, you know. It's a kind of a desert setting, but just reminded me of those sphinxes in the Neverending Story movie, you know, where that guy, whoever, you know, had to outrun the lasers. So yeah, you had this giant statue thing just shooting lasers at you, and it was impressive. It was I'm on board.
So this game is being led by the founder of Gretzo, Koichi Ishii, who worked on directed Final Fantasies 1-3 and the Saga Frontier series, and was responsible for the Seiken Densetsu games. Guillaume, you're more into this series than I am, I think.
Well, more or less. I mean, a lot of people are really into Secret of Mana, and I discovered it only kind of recently-ish. But I liked Final Fantasy Adventure back in the day on the Game Boy, so which was the first game in that series. So yeah, no, I enjoy it. But yeah, this game, how far back do we have to go? this game is a very kind of... It seems like a cross between Seiken Densetsu and Ease 7, just because like you've got your party of three characters that you can switch between at will, and they've each got different abilities for combat, but also kind of to solve puzzles. You know, like one character might be able to blow wind or something, and that's used to solve a puzzle.
It's called John Lindemann.
Yeah. With Gus Bellows.
Hey, I'm mature now, all right, James. I want you to know that.
But yeah, so they showcased like one of the dungeons where there was this very Metroid moment where the character just got inside this sort of plant that spit it out, and you rolled through this morph ball tunnel kind of thing. And there were other kinds of puzzles that kind of spanned different rooms, you know, like you had to go from one room to the other to solve the whole thing and then to get to the boss. So, yeah, that's the Nintendo DNA in this. That's of kind of Zelda and Metroid influences. And I was really impressed.
Yeah. They talked about building up your oasis is a core to the game. I'm super interested to hear how that feeds back into the dungeon exploring, because it kind of brings me to one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. Everybody with me? ActRaiser, which you know has that almost exactly mechanic. You're helping these villages get going, and then that feeds back into your ability to fight the dungeons. It also brings me to my favorite WiiWare game of all time, My Life as a King. So I'm like hoping maybe we'll get some of that stuff in there. There's also that Wii game that came out that had all the public domain music. I'm blanking on.
Yeah, so Jargon is asking
Little King story.
Epic Dumpster Bear.
Epic Dumpster Bear, yes. Epic Dumpster Bear. My favorite Wii game.
But yeah, so this game is announced for like 2017, so it's barely missing the year of RPGs. Maybe the start of a second one.
Maybe it's the fiscal year of RPGs.
The long year of RPGs, maybe.
It's all about the fiscal year.
The unending, the 100 years sleep of RPGs. Link's gonna wake up in a century and return action adventure games to the Nintendo consoles.
Nice.
Oh, that's slightly messianic. I didn't intend that. No, I haven't gotten a chance to watch the Treehouse Live yet, but like the facts of this game are super interesting to me.
Yeah.
But as you said, the trailer was super not. So
yeah, it was just the wrong way to showcase it. And then they had the I guess it was the director just talk about it and what he was thinking when he came up with the idea, and he talked about kind of helping people and friendship and stuff like that. And it's just like, wow, why are you doing this? You know, it's very noble, I'm sure, like you want your game to inspire people, but it's I don't know, like these are not sentiments that have a place in E3. I'm sorry
to reuse.
God has no place in these walls.
That's right. That look, there is a VR porn booth now. Guillaume has a point. But to reprise what is quickly turning into a thanks to the year of RPGs, a catchphrase, anime is happening. Like, that's ultimate. Like, his comments are the ultimate epitome of anime happening.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was so... not cliche. What's the word? It's just so kind
of... No, you had the right word. It's cliche. Yeah.
For all it is.
Cheesy.
So it just... They just didn't showcase the Yeah, the reveal didn't start on the right foot, but then when Trias was playing it, you know, like, it just looked like a ton of fun. So I hope that a lot of people who maybe tuned out when they saw the initial reveal are going to go and check out the treehouse play. That you can find it on the internet, on YouTube, and the dungeon stuff starts about like 10 minutes in. So I recommend at least watching that before you kind of dismiss the game.
Okay, cool. They showed Paper Mario Paint Buckets, whatever that game is called.
Color Splash.
Yep, it looks like everybody's nightmare for what that game is. Looks like Sticker Star 2.
The people who didn't like Sticker Star, it doesn't seem like there's much to sway them, but it is gorgeous.
Oh, it is gorgeous.
Oh my god,
gorgeous.
Really gorgeous. Can't believe how good looking that game is. I mean, you think you've seen Paper Mario games, but there's, you know, they've really, you know, elevated the aesthetic. I feel like it looks fantastic. What I could hear of the music while they were kind of talking over it and stuff seemed like it was pretty damn good. I mean, presentationally, I'm expected to be good. I personally have yet to play Sticker Star. I know it divided, you know, people, and obviously, you know, in particular, you know, people who really liked Paper Mario and Thousand Year Door, the N64 GameCube incarnations. A lot of people who liked those games didn't like this. You know, I've only played the N64 game of those two, and I liked it, but, you know, I don't have a kind of deep-seated attachment to it or anything, so...
Yeah.
You know, I've got an open mind about it in terms of, you know, but I guess, you know, I think especially because Sticker Star's, like, on Nintendo Select over here now, I could buy that but at a modest price and kind of figure out whether this game is going to be for me, or I could just go straight to the one that looks ridiculously gorgeous. I haven't made my mind.
I think your choice is clear here. At least if you don't like it, you played the gorgeous one.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I didn't mind Sticker Star that much. Like, I really enjoyed it, and the things that I didn't like are not particular to Sticker Star. Like, I find that the combat in Mario RPGs in general just gets a little bit long in the tooth. And in Sticker Star, I wish that you could skip more enemy encounters than you actually can. And yes, like, towards the end, like, it seems like maybe it was poorly playtested. Like, there's a lot of puzzles that don't really make sense or that have several possible solutions, but you have to test them all, and you've got limited sticker inventory, and it's really aggravating. So, yeah, not a good final, like, 5-10 hours. But other than that, like, I thought it was a very good Paper Mario RPG, and... I really don't mind if they kind of scale back the RPG-ness in this one. It just looks gorgeous, and it looks like, from what unfortunately, I missed the Treehouse kind of playthrough, but I've seen, you know, quick comments from people on Twitter who played the demo or who saw it, and who are saying that the combat is an improvement over Sticker Star, and that's good enough for me. Like, that and the visual upgrade are good enough for me.
Limited sticker content is my prog rock band, so I appreciate the promotion.
You approve.
So let's see. Oh, there's a certain game that just came out suddenly. Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix. It's just out
right
in North America on the eShop. Go and buy.
So in North America, anyway, it's eShop exclusive. It's not retail, and it's $29.99. But in Canada, it's like you pay more than the conversion rate. It's like $42 plus taxes. Like, it's just, yeah, I'm going to wait for a sale. I'm sorry. This is not an acceptable situation.
The hell is Nintendo of Canada doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they plan these prices like months in advance or something, and just...
They're kind of ensuring against fluctuations in the exchange rate.
Are they just expecting the Canadian dollar to tank?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a shame. I certainly paid far more than that for it when I imported.
You sure did.
but of course, I spoke about it at length then. About a year ago-ish, I guess it was. Bloody good game. Really, really loved it.
Yeah,
so there's a demo that you can download,
which I'm downloading right now. Which is probably not a good thing to do while I'm hosting a Skype call and a stream, but that's okay. I'm sure it'll be fine. And I know what I'm doing as soon as this episode is done. Let's put it that way. So, I do wish they gave this game more attention, though. This just seems like a way to ensure this game doesn't sell well.
I kind of like the arc of it in a way, though, from Beyonce to, and it's on sale now, digitally only. It's quite a journey.
Yeah, it's a dark and sad tale that series has taken, but I'm glad we're finally getting that game. What else did they talk about? Mario Party. There's another Mario Party.
Yeah, so that was another announcement. That was just not only did they show it when obviously they had not said they were going to show it, but you were announcing something we didn't know about before, and you had the amiibo to go along with it, kind of finishing off the ones that people assume were coming from Mario Party 10. Yeah, because not all the characters in that game had their own amiibo.
Daisy and Waluigi are finally here. We can all die unhappy.
Yeah. So I believe it or not, I have never played a Mario Party game. Not have an adequate frame of reference to comment on it.
That can be fixed. We played one by force. So
I watched your stream of it on 400. That's as close as I've ever been.
I wasn't really present for that stream. Let me just tell you that I was there, but I wasn't exactly.
Gee, John, why is that?
I don't know, man. Just things. Times are tough, James. Times are tough.
Well, it just looked very much like a Mario Party game, but the whole gimmick this time is that you can roll the dice at the same time. You all play on the board at the same time, but that seemed to be the extent of the difference.
Gotta fix the game.
Yeah. So I don't know. And then people were like, "Oh, okay. So you play at the same time. Maybe this paves the way for an announcement that it's online." But no, there's no Nintendo network logo on the box.
Why?
And also, people were making fun of the box because the art on it seems to be taken from this these Mario SpaghettiOs or something. It seems to be the same. They recolored the tunic of the Toad on it, but it's the same art. So
that's beautiful.
It doesn't bode well.
I just got a message.
Do we know that's the final art though?
I want it to just be the SpaghettiOs art with the SpaghettiOs logo slapped on the box and then just party scrawled over it. I did just get a message from the chat, though, that Klexloshi will hunt me down in my sleep if I force Mario Party retroactive, which I hadn't thought of until now. So be careful what you wish for.
Oh, dear. Mario Party DS retroactive.
The GBA one.
Oh, yeah, even better.
There is a Box Boy sequel is coming now. What was its name?
Yeah, I've been waiting for this for a while because it's been out in Japan for a good while, and so it's nice to know that they're getting around to that. In a similar vein, I was kind of once they started dropping this kind of stuff that they hadn't really committed to before today, I was hoping for Picross 3D 2, and it didn't happen. So
it did feel a little bit like this was the wish fulfillment of things that happened in Japan that you guys haven't seen yet, but not that one. Oh yeah, Box Boy, another box.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but that was what it was called in Japan.
I know, but at least in Japan, it's like, all right, the Japanese suck at naming things. Like, at some point, you assumed that someone wouldn't give it this name, where they're like, fuck it, we're doing another Box Boy, I don't care, another box, get out of my office. Like, I can't think of a more apathetic name for a game than that. Like,
but in the U.S., it's called Box Box Boy.
Box Box Boy, yes, you're right, I'm sorry, you're right. Box Box Boy is also terrible. equally awful in a different, amazing... I thought somebody spelled it wrong the first time. I thought the person was just typing wrong and messed up, so...
It is weird.
Good job. It's all caps, Box Boy, specifically.
Yeah, it's just... I don't know. Nintendo has this knack for naming things in a way that you're never sure if it's a typo or like what if they're just like the new 3DS. Okay, and like then you have to read sentences three times to see like a new Nintendo 3DS title. Wait, what? A new? Okay.
Is it a new 3DS? And if new was capitalized, it's like, oh, they're talking about the new 3DS. But yeah. Nintendo yeah. Style Guide, I think, actually lowercases the new 3DS because they're monsters.
Yeah, so I don't really
interpret it as a subtle troll.
It's the amiibo problem. Like, do you capitalize the word amiibo? Well, it's in the title. You should definitely capitalize it. Well, the proper noun says you don't capitalize it because Nintendo's English people are fucking monsters.
Yeah, don't so Box Boy, I could see people just being like, oh yeah, I own this game already, and then gloss over it, you know, not thinking that it's a new game.
Oh, totally. Like it's a bad name, and it's a bummer because I really like Box Boy, and I'll probably really like Box Squared Boy, but I don't necessarily think I'm going to remember to buy it because that game is taking the Kirby to an extreme of like that's a circle with like some shading and that's the character, but to also put that in the name is kind of a bummer. I don't know. I'm probably getting way too worked up about something so incredibly stupid. So, was there?
So are
any,
we now? Sorry.
Were there any other games we want to talk about?
No, not really. Should we talk about the stuff they didn't show?
Let's actually one thing I do want to touch on, Mr. Lindemann.
Yes, sir.
As our expert on the study of amiibo.
Oh God.
How do you feel? First off, I know you've pre-ordered your Daisy amiibos. You're one to open and you're one to keep. How do you feel about the use of the wolf amiibo in Zelda Breath of the Wild?
Surprisingly enough, that is the one video that I completely skipped on YouTube, James.
So let me
why?
So let me...
Because it had the word amiibo in it.
was it capital A or lowercase a, John?
It was lowercase a.
Of course it was.
But yeah, there's about six or seven videos on there for Zelda, and it was like, okay, I'll watch that and that amiibo. Nah, skipping that one, and that one.
You
and
get
that one,
you get right. A wolf companion, John. You get a wolf companion.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, amiibo is what it is at this point. You know, I've buried the hatchet as far as amiibo goes. You know, amiibo can just do its thing. I mean, you just amiibo, you do you. You just go live your life.
Are you talking to the 12 you've got on your shelf right now, or the 14 that are sitting on your desk?
I have one, and
of each.
I think I regret it more than the cat helmet. Because at least the cat helmet can hold a copy of a game inside it. All right, and anything else I want to stash in there, goddammit.
Like your cat's head.
Hey, whatever. What I do in my own time is my business. But yeah.
What about your poor cat's time?
I do have one amiibo, and it's the 8-bit Mario.
Okay.
So I think I retain some street cred. All right?
I will say you should watch that video because I was actually really impressed I was just really impressed by how the wolf looked.
Like, yeah, just, nah, it looks good.
Mm-hmm. Like how it moves and it's there is this weird like isn't that Link also? So what's happening right now? Why can I only summon my wolf friend once a day? But it's cool. Like it's a neat little thing. It fits the game, but like, yeah, it's cool. It's really cool, and I'm just want people to go watch that video.
No, I'm really shocked considering you know that launch with Twilight Princess HD that they seem to have come up with something. So yeah, they said before Twilight Princess HD came out, like this will work with the next Zelda then untitled game for Wii U, and you kind of think it'll probably be something. Yeah, pretty
it'll be like arrows or something stupid.
You know, and obviously in Twilight Princess HD, it doesn't do a lot. It just saves a score that you get in a gauntlet of wolf killing enemy challenges, like that's it. But then that score, your heart's remaining now, is how much health your wolf companion has when you summon him. So, you know, I guess you would actually want to, you know, get that up there. I guess it would be somewhat a function of how many hearts you've got from Twilight Princess HD. So it's like an incentive to get all the pieces of heart and stuff
in
and
the game that has five.
I've got all of them actually in Twilight Princess HD. I finally, wow. Off TV play comes to the rescue again.
So Greg's going to have the best wolf.
Well, yeah, that's it. I have the amiibo as well. It came with the game here. It was sort of with the sort of soundtrack edition of the game, and it's a good looking one. It's probably the best looking one I've seen in terms of detail. So yeah, kind of bodes well for those new ones they showed with Link with the bow and the crazy guardian thing and Link on the horse, and those are prototypes, of course. So, you know, don't get too excited. you always want to look at the final product, but the final product of the wolf is really good, and I am shocked at how neat that looks in the game. So
yeah, blew me away.
It's nice to have, like, the one thing about amiibo is that you get these things that are like these little treats, like for owning them, that are not promised, you know, and a lot of the time they are very minor, and then there's this, which is actually pretty cool. So it's nice when that comes up every now and again.
The chat wants
to.
Well,
I mean, it better be a nice reward because you get so few. Sorry, what?
I said I've done it now. I brought up amiibo.
Oh. No, but like in the Zelda game, like your Zelda amiibo better give you a good reward because Zelda games come around so infrequently, right? Like, I'm fine with Mario amiibo giving you a costume in Mario Kart because you're going to also use the same amiibo in Super Mario Maker and, you know, like in the Smash Brothers and stuff. But, you know, Link is not... does not have kind of the status of Mario, is not in so many recurring series, so
right. Yeah, they do they've been putting out more product though lately. We think of like Warriors and Triforce Heroes and all that, you know. I mean, even though console Zelda's like wholly original games are quite rare. I mean, you know, he's had a whole bunch of games on 3DS as Link, and arguably none of them are wholly original. There's two remakes, A Link Between Worlds, which has its world from A Link to the Past, and Triforce Heroes, which is heavily based on A Link Between Worlds and Four Swords Adventures. So, I mean, right. You know, the actual wholly original games do remain quite rare, but you do get quite a lot of Link product. But yeah, it's not Mario. I mean, Mario's all over the place. You know, he's got everything, sports and, you know, racing and board games and, yeah, the whole thing.
Right, so basically what I'm saying is, yeah, so what I'm saying is the amiibo to give you as much value for your money has to be, yeah, to give you more bang for your buck for each game than a Mario amiibo.
Yeah, totally. And
I
mean,
so
it's cool.
I just watched the amiibo trailer, by the way, the Breath of the Wild. It looks pretty cool. I kind of hate the fact I like the wolf, that you can have the wolf attack your enemies and also hunt for food, which is kind of cool, but...
It's kind of
swear
cool.
To God, don't really care about buying it. Nope.
Oh,
will
that's
not.
What he says. No, just wait. All right.
Will not.
So Nintendo has announced like the new wave of amiibo has a Waluigi in it, and I'm just waiting for them to announce how Waluigi is used in Breath of the Wild, because if you have Waluigi just beating up Moblins with you in the game, that's just
all the Boko Blins draw. Joel's glasses on each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So chat wants us to talk about Yo-Kai Watch 2, but I didn't watch it, and you guys don't give a crap about Yo-Kai Watch. That's going to be hard.
I don't know. Like, I saw Neil tweet about it, and he said that everything he's heard about the game says that, like, it's so much better than the first game. So I'm guessing if you like the first game, you're going to love this one. But,
yep, and I did like the first one, so stay tuned, folks.
Well, I haven't seen that stuff yet, but I mean, it's kind of like with Inazuma 11 when that first came over here. Is that, well, you know, they made the level 5 already done a bunch more games in Japan,
right?
And you know, they are considered to be significant improvements, so it does kind of put you off buying the first one. Because you think, well, hopefully enough other people will buy. It's the free rider problem, folks. Enough other people will buy the first one for them to localize the second one or the third one, and that will actually be the one to buy.
Well, Yeah, so what I know about the second one in the chat just reminded me, it's got time travel, which of course it does because this game is weird. But it does the two-version nonsense, so yay.
Yeah, but the director on the stream said the only thing that changes is you have different yokai in each of them. So it's the Pokemon thing, basically.
Yeah, so yeah.
But you don't get a new story or anything.
So yeah, I mean, it's the Yo-Kai Watch series is the right kind of stupid for me, so I'll probably watch that section and enjoy it well enough. But yeah, I mean, they've made so many Yo-Kai Watch games, it's kind of silly when we have one at E3 at this point. Because that game came out in Japan like 4 years ago, okay. But it's just a reminder, the 3DS is kind of an old system at this point. Like, not super old, but like, it's had a pretty long life.
Again, we're playing RPGs and Kirby.
Yep.
It's a direct way to tell, but it's a
harbinger right there.
Yeah. So I think in terms of games that were there, that's probably going to do it. Let's talk about an omission.
Well, the Dragon Quest Sharp FE, just quickly mentioned, got much more to say.
Because of course Sharp FE has been out in Japan for a while. Dragon Quest 7 has been out in Japan for a while. Ace Attorney wasn't on the stream, was it? Monster Hunter was. That comes out soon. The demo codes went out today, actually. So if you have a demo code, go enjoy that. I don't think I got one, actually, which is surprising. It looks good. But in terms of what's
not that this was in the E3 thing or whatever, but the Ghosts and Goblins costume thing. It piqued my interest in just the sort of cheap way they wanted it to.
They've got the balls, Greg.
You acknowledge the existence of Ghosts and Goblins at this point, Capcom.
Capcom special. Like that's what leads to them making a fucking terrible cartoon in the Ghosts and Goblins universe where his underwear talks. So you're about 5 years off, Greg.
God.
School and he's like, you know, trying to make friends.
Arthur's
or whatever,
got like a little.
His armor keeps falling off, so it's really difficult.
Arthur's got like a little demon living under his ear. Mariah. Yeah, you're about 4 years from a bad Canadian produced CG cartoon. So look forward to that because Capcom is monsters. That's what Monster Hunter is. Remind you of the good old days. I'm sorry, this has gotten dark again. Yes, those games look good. But what they didn't show, so Neostar X says, not to start a riot, but is there anything we can take from the 100% lack of Metroid Prime Federation Force? Especially considering it's supposed to release in two months.
I think the references to the Twitter mentions is probably apt at this point in that, you know, like the positivity of having everybody talk about Zelda, you know, all those mentions go into Zelda. You know, probably some of those mentions would have got siphoned off to people saying Federation Force causes cancer or whatever. I think they just, you know, they're trying to wall it off from all the other stuff, really, because it's got this kind of baggage, which is weird to say for a game that's still a few months from coming out. But
it's not out.
It's August, which is, you know, it's pretty close to be very. You ideally you'd want to talk it up, but I think they probably just felt like, you know, as much as they might like to talk it up for its own sake, it might end up kind of crowding out, you know, creating noise that crowds out the other stuff they're trying to talk about that doesn't have some of this negative perception attached to it. So I think that they would just be conservative in that way. But, you know, I hope they do find a way to message things a little better between now and August to give it a chance at least.
Yeah. What else did they not show?
There were rumors that Mother 3 was going to show up, but the rumors never mentioned E3. They mentioned 2016. So
I would like to say I signed off the article last week with, you can ask us where Mother 3 will also not show up.
It's not going to show up.
If you don't read the show notes, you should definitely read the show notes, because there's usually at least one thing in there that's going to make Neil go,
It's not going to show up on the 4th.
God,
that's a shame. Yeah. But I hope it's gonna get here eventually. I really do.
Yeah,
Mother 3 for NX.
You never know. I kind of did that with Earthbound on Wii U, didn't I? I
mean, Mother 3 for whatever is coming after NX.
There was a window there where some people considered that like the closest thing to a killer app that the Wii U had, Earthbound. I think that was an unkind way of looking at things.
Yes, because that might game makes me want to turn into a killer. So yes, that is an accurate description.
Nintendo, like, this is basically the first year of the Wii U that it won't have like a big Christmas game. So maybe Mother 3 is going to be that. They're going to sell it on a disc.
Yeah, because it's going to be on all the store shelves. Paper Mario is October, and then after that, there's not a lot, is there, that we know about, unless we've got Pokemon for 3DS coming in November, which is obviously going to be massive. You've got Mario Party for 3DS and a bunch of other stuff for 3DS. But yeah, Wii U is definitely going to be slight this year. I guess last year was really light on the mainstream stuff. Obviously you had Xenoblade, which for those who were open to that sort of thing was just a colossal time sink. You didn't necessarily have any room for anything else. But if you weren't sort of open to Xenoblade's charm, then last year was pretty, with Mario Tennis just sort of being shoved out there as quickly as possible to fill a spot. I don't know whether there'll be an analogous title that will emerge, even later this year. But that doesn't necessarily, that isn't necessarily a very good sort of portent for its quality if such a thing did emerge.
Yeah.
Maybe, kind of in the similar way that Nintendo got, like the Wii U got Minecraft at the last minute on the eShop, and that was basically the game of Christmas 2015 for my nephew. Maybe now they're going to get like Five Nights at Freddy's or something. I don't know.
Shit. All right, that's a dark way to end the show.
Yeah, well, I tell you a few other things. Shantae looks good, very good.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
That's coming along. That's quite soon now, isn't it? It was September, I think, for that, and that's getting a retail release from Exceed in the States anyway. I've only played one previous Shantae game, which is the 3DS Pirate's Curse. I really enjoyed that. So this has got the sort of full HD graphics kind of treatment. Looks very nice. People, TYP did an interview with two of the Playtonic ukulele folks, and they did a very kind of literal demo in that they demonstrated it for you. It was hands-off.
Yeah, the hands-off demo is always a red flag.
Yeah, supposedly there's something about, they want to get the first hands-on in the hands of the backers, the Kickstarter backers and all that. But it's still looking pretty good. I feel like there's some things to look forward to there as well, just outside of there were a few things outside of the treehouse kind of purview that looked pretty cool.
Yeah, we actually have an interview for the Ace Attorney 6 coming up. I don't know when it's going to go live on the site, but it was done today, and I'm told it went really well, so you can look forward to that. Nintendo World Report, we have impressions of everything. You can go read them now at the website. It's the website we post this podcast. It's the website you're on if you're listening to this live right now, so...
Go to the front page right now. Abandon this stream.
Are you saying...
Bail out.
People, is that the point you're
making?
It's
the website, comma... people, ellipses. Yes, but I think that's probably going to do it for us. If you guys have any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
It wasn't
as dead as I expected it to be in the lead-in.
Yeah, basically what I was going to say. Like, we were told, just Zelda playable, and then we were told, oh, wait, we've found a few games under the cushions, and we'll bring them. So that was good news.
Yeah, a little bit of expectations management, I think, again, kind of playing into what I was saying about the Federation Force situation, or it seemed like they were a little bit more Annie about, you know, about that sort of thing this year, and did a decent job with that. And there's some, I think there's some talk I saw online about that, you know, some people did actually get to play some of these games, even though yes. Zelda was officially the only playable game.
There were the ability to play some of these games did exist, but they were not at the floor.
Yeah, they weren't on the floor, so that, I mean, there's that. I guess we'll see some coverage around, but yeah. So I mean, like I said, they managed expectations relatively well, and so in that sense, I think it went okay. And I guess the biggest thing is just there wasn't any sort of surprise for Wii U that filled out that schedule, but that doesn't really surprise me at all, because we know, you know, the grim situation that format's in, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they did enough to make their presence felt, and, you know, they got the word out, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the line to play Zelda was basically closed as soon as it opened every day, which is absurd and silly. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. like, so to your point, even though they didn't have a big stage show, people still knew they were there, and they still made an impact, yep. which is really... At where they're at right now in the market, that's the best you can hope for.
Yep.
They came in with zero word of mouth and left with word of mouth.
Oh, they sure did.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big accomplishment.
But at the same time, 2017 is pretty far away.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
There's not a whole lot that's coming for the rest of the year.
It is, in fact, 6 months and 15 days away, if you're counting.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that Zelda and DNX are going to release on January 1st.
Yeah, that's right at the back end of the fiscal year at the earliest. It's going to be March.
So speaking of NX, Guillaume, the CEO of Nintendo of Canada, basically let slip that they're going to talk about NX in the fall.
Nice. So,
in French, so all the translations I've read seem really awkward, but... So there you go. We have our answer. You can wait a little bit longer and then wait some more and then you'll get it.
The announcement of the announcement.
That's the quote in the original if Guillaume would care to read it for us, but if not, that's fine. But I'm pretty sure I'm reading that correctly, that like we're focusing on Zelda right now and NX will come in the autumn.
Yeah, no, all he says is that they decided to focus on Zelda. We will talk about DNX again this fall. For now, it's 100%. The fall, we're going to just talk about DNX. But right now, it's just Zelda.
100% Zelda, which sounds like a J-pop group. So, on that, you could send us your emails if you've got questions. Because after listening to this, you've definitely probably got questions. They're probably not questions we can answer on the show. But there's probably definitely questions that need to be answered.
At the very least, you want to gather evidence.
You can send us those. You can send us those questions in the form of a deposition. You can send your subpoenas to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And we do not know what the NX is, so don't ask. All we're going to do is send you that file back. Yep.
James Jones is my daddy. James Jones.
God damn it!
Oh god.
James Jones is my daddy. James Jones is my daddy.
I'm gonna end the show now. Greg, do we have any end music? If not, I'm just gonna end this thing.
Oh, I think we're sort of spitting this out. I hadn't intended on us, you know, having
anything. Oh, okay.
James Jones is my daddy.
Are you done?
James Jones is my daddy.
All right, you're done. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for everybody who joined us in the chat. And we'll see y'all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 James Jones is my daddy.
God damn it.